Fun?
Yeah, okay.
So this is the joy work with my supervisor, Steve Cook. And we're interested in formalizing the correctness of randomized algorithms, specifically matching algorithms in a very weak system of subsystem of bounded arithmetic. So just to give you the general setting, so basically when you talk about proof complexity, there are two aspects. The first aspect is very nicely introduced by Tony Pitassi in the morning. It's about the length of the proofs, called propositional proofs complexity. But that's also another, the second aspect, called bounded arithmetic, where you study the power of weak formal system, subsystem of Peano arithmetic, to prove theorems of interest in computer science. And these two aspects are related through the process called propositional translation. So what I mean is a proof in some bounded arithmetic system P can be translated to uniform short proof in some corresponding propositional system PT. So in that sense, bounded arithmetic can be seen as a sort of the uniform version of proof complexity, similar to the intuitions of uniform complexity class and non-uniform complexity classes. And the word bounded here again is the restriction on the induction axiom. You want to do induction axiom, do inductions of bounded formula. So that's what bounded mean. So this talk focuses on the second aspect of it. That's why I highlight the part. Also to give more intuitions about what is bounded arithmetic. So we need the kind of analogy, you know, this is a nice analogy between complexity class and bounded arithmetic. So in complexity theory, you are interested in the problem given a theorem, what kind of complexity class the problem belongs to, right? So in bounded arithmetic, you're interested in theorems. So given the theorem, what kind of theory can you prove the theorem? So in the work by Cook and Nguyen, so actually this is a recent book in 2010, the copy is outside in the book display session. So this research program called Bounded Reverse Mathematics, it's a part of Nguyen's PhD thesis. Basically, they give a very nice and uniform way to assign for each complexity class a minimal theory that's supposed to capture the reasoning of that complexity class. And then you can ask the question, okay, so what is the smallest complexity class such that the corresponding theory can prove the given theorem? So that sense, and of course, another aspect is, you know, instead of separate complexity class now or collapsed complexity classes, you are interested in separate or collapsed formal theories now. Anyway, but in this talk, focus on this corner, which is, you know, classified theorem according to the minimal theory needed to prove them. So, and in particular, we are interested in the polytime reasoning in this talk, and particularly the theory VPB. So it's a theory associated with polytime reasoning. It's a universal theory based on Cook's equational theory PV in his paper in 1975. PV was interesting, still interesting. Because it was historically the first theory that aims to capture polytime reasoning. VPV has function symbol for polytime and the defining axiom for these symbols, and based on Kolb-Hahn theorems. So Kolb-Hahn theorems give a machine independent way to characterize polytime function, very similar to the way you see how they define primitive recursive function, very similar to that. If you have all the polytime function symbols and the axiom, then you don't need the induction axiom as part of the theory, because you can derive it as a theorem using boundary search. So it's kind of constructive proof of induction. Another interesting part about VPV is the theorem is in VPV can be translated to families of tautology that have poli-sci extended Frege proofs. And proof in VPV are feasibly constructed in the following sense. So given a VPV proof, so if you give me the VPV proofs of the formulas for all exists, and phi with variable x and y, where phi represents a polytime predicate, then from this proof I can extract out a polytime function fx, and I can transform the proof into a proof of this formula on x, x, fx. So you can think of it as you extract out a polytime function fx and the correctness proof of the function. So, and I want to emphasize again, the induction is restricted to only polytime concept. So what happens? So for example, usually polytime algorithms have feasible proof, correctness proof. For example, the example that we actually formalized in our paper, not for fun, but we actually need it. Because we are talking matching algorithms, so when we talk about maximum matching, for example, then we actually have to prove the correctness of the maximum matching, or minimum way matching, then we want to use that concept in our proof, then we have to formalize the correctness of it. That's why we have to formalize the augmenting path algorithms and Hungarian algorithms. So it's not in the preceding version, but it's in any our website, Steve's website or my website on have the link to the version with the appendices. But then you can ask, okay, it's nice, but how about randomized algorithm, right? How are you supposed to formalize them? So that's the original question I asked Steve, and that started his investigation. So we take example as very nice matching algorithms. In particular, two algorithms, the R and C2 algorithms for testing if a bipartite graph has a perfect matching or not. And the second one is not just testing, not answer just yes or no, but you want also have to output the perfect matching. And both of these are randomized NC2, and just to recall, it's NC2. NC2 intuitively correspond to Gauss polytime parallel, fast parallel algorithms that has logarithm square time. Or another way to say it is computed by uniform family of circuit with logarithm square depth, poli-sci, bounded Fanon. And the NC is between log space and P. We don't know if these containments are strict, and RNC is just, the randomized version of NC, just for a reminder. And another remark is, these two algorithms also work for indirect graph, general one, but in this paper we focus on bipartite graphs, and at the end I will give comments how to generalize the techniques. Okay, so we start with the first algorithm for testing if a bipartite graph has a perfect matching, right? So why does, the problem is given a bipartite graph G, just like that, and decide if G has a perfect matching or not. So the technique is you start with the adjacency matrix. Basically, the entry corresponds to B. E, for example, is 1 if there's an edge from B, between B and E. So what you do is you replace all the 1 entries with distinct variables. So you want at each position it has a distinct variable, no two position has the same variable, and that's the theorem used to Edmonds, I believe, that G has the perfect matching if and only if the symbolic determinant of this matrix is not identically to zero. And just a remark, the usual proof is not feasible in the sense it used this formula. Let's say the determinant is the sum over all the permutations that has n factorial terms. So in polytime theory, you cannot really manipulate these exponentially large objects. So even for these simple theorems, then we have to rephrase the proof already. VPV, yeah. Okay, yes. Which one? For what? Identically to zero, because you can make it a bounded case. Right. So for this polynomial, the degree is n. So you're interested in all the values between, let's say, 0 to 2n. Because that's the case when you buy the Schwarz polynomial, and that's all you want. Exactly. So you have to rephrase the statement in such a way that you can actually prove it, right? But I want to skip the details. It's hairy, but yes, you always have to tweak the proof. You cannot use the original one. Okay, I will go to deeper to the details. So you, for example, for the right hand side to the left hand side, let's say the determinant is not identical to zero, then you have a perfect matching. Then you formulate the statement at given a values that make the determinant not equal to zero because that's existential. So then to give zero that you can substitute to xij that makes the determinant not equal to zero. You can now compute the determinant. Then there's an algorithm, poly time, that you can extract out a non-zero diagonal. So that's what you are doing. You should read my paper. I'm just joking, sorry. So okay, so this is a reminder of what it is. So the observation is, basically what Eisenman theorem say is, you reduce the problem of testing if a graph has perfect matching or not to the problems of called the polynomial identity testing. So basically, given one formulation of it is, given a polynomial, is it a non-zero polynomial or not? And the case here is what we call Edmonds polynomial. It basically is the symbolic determinant of that, which it has n squared variables and degree bounded by n. So that's important. And what happens? So basically, you can use the usual algorithms for testing if the degree is zero or not. If a polynomial is zero or not. Basically, you pick n squared random value uniformly and independently at random, n squared value rj, each value for each variables in the matrix from this range 0 to 2 to n, because it has to be twice, and it's twice as we compare to the degree. And algorithms basically say you sub in the matrix. Now you can use efficient algorithms to evaluate it and answer yes, if the determinant is equal to zero here, so you say yes, the determinant is a zero polynomial and no otherwise. And the correctness of it is based on the fact that, if the determinants, symbolic determinants of this matrix is zero already, no matter what value you sub in, you always get zero value. If the determinant is not zero, then with probability at least half, R is not a zero of the polynomial, it's not a root of the polynomial. And this is the probabilistic part that we have to formalize. Two follows from something called the Schwartz-Zippel lemma. So look at this algorithm itself. What are the difficulties that, about formalizing it? So the first obstacle is to talk about probability. So basically, what you do is, you usually have to talk about this kind of statement, like given a polytime predicate A, F, R, F is input, R is random input, and you usually have to talk about the probabilities A, X, R hold when R is chosen random from 0, 1 to the n. Basically, what it is you want to calculate the ratio between the cardinality of the set on the numerator over 2 to the n. And if you look at this function fx, which is basically the cardinality of the set on the top, for arbitrary polytime predicate, is a Sharpe complete. And a Sharpe complete problem is very bad because it's even outside the polytime hierarchy, so much harder than NP problems. So in feasible theory, you cannot hope to define the notion of probability directly. So what you do is actually, it turns out there's a solution due to Gerbert is, instead of whenever you want to prove some inequality like this, probability ASR holds over S is bigger than S over T, then you can rephrase it in this form. Basically, you multiply the T to the other side and so on. And now the key idea is you can construct a polytime onto a function that maps T copy of this set onto S copy of the other set. And in polytime theory, we can do that. That's what we already know how to do. So the basic, again, the basic idea is, you have two sets, which are subset of 0, 1 to the n, which are definable by some polytime predicate. you define that Z gamma is larger than delta if delta is a polyton surjective function that maps gamma to delta. This is the usual set theoretical way of doing it. So instead of talking about the size directly, you use mapping to compare a set. But you know, this is, if you introduce the definition like this, you have to verify that this is a well-behaved definition. You look at set theory books, that's what they do. And actually, that's actually the work for a series of paper, wonderful paper by Jerebeck from 2004-2009, just to verify that this is a well-behaved robust definition. Use very sophisticated framework based on approximate counting techniques, so you cannot solve a Sharpie problem precisely, but you can use approximate counting to approximate the size or to some errors. So that's the basic idea. And use all the theories of the randomization and pseudo-randomness and so on. And the application is, of course, formalized probabilistic complexity classes. But in this talk, the upper definition is all we need to know. So the second part is about the difficulty of the Schwarz-Zipf lemma. So this is a statement of Schwarz-Zipf lemma. When you have polynomial and variables degree d over a field, given a set S, which is a sample set, then the probability that R is the root of the polynomial, the zero of polynomial, is bounded upper bound by d over the size of S. So this is also an obstacle for us in the sense the usual proof assumes that we can rewrite the polynomial as this nice form. So basically you rewrite in terms of the first variables and the rest are coefficients which themselves are also polynomials. And the problem in the difficulty with the polynomial identity testing is when these polynomials are given as arithmetic circuit or symbolic determinants, what happens is you usually have a exponential degree over there, or you have exponentially many terms, as in the case of the determinant. So you cannot formalize it directly in feasible theory. There's no such a nice or efficient way to manipulate the polynomial directly. So the solution is being less ambitious, restricted to the Edmonds polynomials, the case that look at the matrix that reduced from the instant of bipartite graph matching. And it, of course, it's nice, you know, because in this case, we get to look at carefully, each variable only appear once. That's nice. What it means is because, for example, you can rewrite it in terms of X3 trait easily. This is the usual cofactor expansion. And you don't have to expand the whole thing. These are, again, determinants. So what it means is you use the properties of the determinants as a way to expand the polynomial slowly, but you don't want to expand completely at once. So, and it's the fact that each variable appears once is nice. I do not talk about the details, but that's the starting point. But if you look at the proof in the proceeding, it has nothing, it doesn't look very much like the usual proof, because the statement we do, we have to prove is very different from the usual proof, because we have to build constructively this polyton suggestion. And that's a bit tricky. That's why I don't want to go to the details. And the mapping is n copy of s to the n square minus 1 over the sets of 0 of the polynomial. And so that statement is just the same as this inequality. You have n s here, s there. You cancel it out. That's why you have n square minus 1. Okay. And I will just one slide talking about, okay, so from that, we formalize the first algorithm for testing if a graph has a perfect matching. Now it goes to the second algorithm for finding a perfect matching of bipartite graph. So the previous algorithm is the fast algorithm, is the fast parallels algorithm that can test if a bipartite graph has a perfect matching or not. Using that algorithm itself, it's very easy to output one of the edge of some bipartite matching. But the problem is how to use different processes, each of them compute an edge of the same matching, how to coordinate all the processes so that they compute the edges of the same matching. So it turns out the key idea is to reduce to finding a unit minimum way perfect matching, so it's unique. And the techniques they use is due to Mumuli Varizani Varizani, that's not a typo. These are two brothers, that's how. But then again, the isolated lemma seems too general to give a feasible proof. So we just rested to a special case of it, where what we are interested in is the perfect matching of the graph. So the version we want is given a bipartite graph. Assume that the family of own perfect matching is not empty, so at least the graph has one perfect matching. Then if we assign random weights to the edges, then the probability is the minimum weight perfect matching is unique is high. So we want to, and that's the idea. And using the same technique as the previous proof, not the same, but sort of similar style of building the mapping, we also formalize this algorithm. So just to summarize the whole thing, so basically, this is what we are interested in, formalized randomized algorithms and statement that has probability in it, in theory for poly time. And we demonstrate our techniques to these two algorithms. And the basic idea is just consider the these two Schwarz-Siebel lemma and isolating lemma for the case we are interested in, and take advantage of the properties of Edmonds matrix and Edmonds polynomial to manipulate this polynomial. So of course, the best two open problems right away. The first one is somehow classify the class of nice polynomial representing, you choose a representation, let's say determinants or the class of arithmetic circles that you also know how to manipulate this way very nicely. Thus, and I haven't really seriously considered that problem, but it's hard because, you know, the polynomial has exponential degree. For example, you take Hill's theory as granted, you can take a lot of properties of polynomials granted. Let's say the famous Little Theorem. If you want to use it at all, we don't even know if it is provable in any theory correspond to any level of the polytime hierarchy. So forget about it to show how high it is. So you have to figure out different techniques to do that. And of course, for the whole paper, this is a randomized NC2 algorithms, right? But we have to use feasible theory because some steps we do not know how to do them in parallel. So can we do in better than that, let's say the NC2, so theory for NC2. And it actually depends on some very difficult problem open for 10 years already. It's about, although the determinants can be computed fast, using something, let's say, Berkovich algorithm. So you reduce the determinants to matrix powering. You do not know how to prove the basic properties of the determinants, let's say, covector expansion or Kelly-Hamilton theorems, the kind of thing. You do not know how to do better than, let's say, polytime theory. So it's open for 10 years already. And but there are classes that we know how to deal with, let's say, if you want to generalize the work to indirect graph, it turns out instead of using the determinants, if you use the Fathian of it, then it has also nice properties that you can manipulate quite easily. It needs to, you know, generalize some framework. So basically, this is a PhD thesis of Michael Sotis, also a Steve student, where he formalized the properties of the determinants we want to lift the framework to Fathian. And this work is supposed to do with Steve and Fongs. And in the broadest perspective is to use geometric technique to study different constructive aspects of theorems that require probabilities, you know. And a weak collection of it is in cryptography. And this is ongoing work with Wesley George. And that's a recent beautiful work by Moser and then Moser Tadish, the constructive proof of the Lovaas local lemma. Constructive in the sense, you know, okay, Lovaas local lemma say if some condition is satisfied, then exists a good an object that has the property you desire. So the original problem is, you know, they do not have an efficient algorithms to construct the object you want. So that's the usual problem with probabilistic method. And there's some work, but the best work is due to Moser and Tadeusz recently that actually sort of find randomized algorithms to compute the object. And that proof using encoding technique, incompressibility technique, Kummer-Crow complexity. That's another way to formalize randomized algorithm. And that proof, the constructed in that sense is not the same in the kind of constructed in our sense. So we want to show that they're also feasibly constructed in some sense. Okay, so that's it, and thank you. Yes. Actually, we haven't really considered the strongest form, just the bipartite graph. Of course, it's going to hold for the case of a direct reflective graph too. The problem is, you want in the proof, you need to be able to compute the minimum weight, let's say perfect matching. Let's say for the usual, the general case, how do you actually compute the minimum weight, let's say some difficult object that belongs to NP or something like that. So that's why it's difficult. Even when the object is unique, that's a theorem by Valiant and Varizani that show, you know, unique start is as bad as the whole start itself, right? So, okay. Yes, thank you. Oh, yes, Yvonne. I'm sorry? Proposition? So what do you mean? in VPV, you know, when you want to use it, because in the mapping that I want to build, I actually have to compute the minimum weight perfect matching, let's say. Maybe you can. In some sense, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I never think about the propositional way that you think. But yeah, okay. It's about the mapping, yeah. But it's very different. It's when you formalize randomized algorithm, it's very different. It looks very different compared to the usual proof, right? So. Not really. We just have the function that do the mapping that witness that the probability is at least a half. And yeah, and in some cases you want really to actually get the object itself, you have to add in some weak counting principle, like weak pigeonhole principle. That's, I don't want to get into it, but that's one way. The weak pigeonhole principle to say, you know, if you have a mapping that goes from 2 to n. If there's mapping like that, then there is something which is outside of the range of the function. That's it. Compared to the strong version is when instead of this, you have 2 to the n plus 1, right? The distinction is 1. And the strong version is not known to be provable to any theories within the polytime hierarchy. This is provable respect to, let's say, the third level of the polytime hierarchy. That's it. But if you add that kind of thing, okay, yes. Can take it offline.
Yeah.